At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
If you're enjoying this independent podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a few moments to do a review, like, share, and subscribe. And if you'd like to see extra content and show your support, head to the Patreon. The link is in the show notes. What does a narcissist do when exposed? Sam Vaknin told me and did just that.
The narcissist's very likely, most likely reaction would be to devalue you. To say, for example, well, you're too stupid to understand. Or in due time, you will realize that what you're saying is wrong. Or you're an abuser, you're victimizing me. So he would devalue you somehow. He would devalue your morality, your conduct or misconduct, or attributed misconduct. He would misattribute, this is known as attribution error, he would misattribute. He would say you are a bad person, that's why you're behaving this way. So he would demonize you.
And that is how he reacted to me, and no doubt now, more ferociously to this podcast.
We had an agreement as to the topic.
But it's not personal.
It is personal.
It's professional, and but this, I can't have someone as an
unethical behavior on your part.
But well, I disagree.
You could have written to me. Listen, this is what I would like to discuss. These are, and then I would have agreed or disagreed. But to spring it as a kind of trap, that is extremely unethical behavior, and you should know that as a documentarist.
He will likely try to discredit me, attack me professionally, and claim it's all lies. But what I'm about to do in this episode is lay out evidence that there's no coming back from, no explaining away. I will expose him as the liar, the abuser, the predator, using his own words.
He would do something, and then he would tell you, there's no way I did this. No way I would have done this, because he has this rigid structure inside, and he keeps comparing information to this rigid structure, and if the facts defy the structure, he will prefer the structure to the facts.
Here he admits narcissists convince themselves that their lies are reality. But so much of what he has done is catalogued in text messages, emails, and voice notes. It is hard to deny the reality and context of this.
Fuck you, you evil bitch! May you rot in hell!
And it's because he's a narcissist, he can't help himself. He actually boasts to other victims about what he's done and what he's capable of, serving also as a threat to the new person in his clutches. What he didn't think about was all these communications being made public. But a lot of what he says is also in his YouTube videos and seminars. You just don't realise he's confessing publicly. He isn't talking generally, he's talking about himself.
Some of them are seriously dangerous. Seriously dangerous. So today it's a Russian roulette. You attend therapy with someone, you have no idea how boundary it is, how violent it is, how aggressive it may be. Will he blackmail you? Will he rape you? You can't tell. Simply you can't tell. It's a Russian roulette.
That's Sam on YouTube, warning an interviewer of charlatan therapists who might rape patients. He points out that even valid credentials doesn't mean that they aren't like the fictional serial killer Hannibal Lecter, a character he likes to compare himself to.
To obtain a degree in psychology or psychiatry, you don't need to pass any mental health tests. You can be a raving lunatic, dangerous to yourself and to others, and end up treating people. You could be unboundaried. For example, you could be a borderline.
What is the Hannibal Lecter case?
It's real. It's factual. You could be Hannibal Lecter and treat people. So, and this is, of course, a guild approach. You know, it's a monopoly. And when there's a monopoly, a professional monopoly, and when there's a monopoly, standards are lowered.
When Sam's world started to come crashing down at the end of 2022, he had to attempt to do some damage limitation. He contacted the filmmakers and told them there was a smear campaign. But as you know, Mark had already been told about the allegations. And despite trying to remain neutral with Sam, further interviews with him were a no-go. Sam also made claims to some of his newer existing victims that he was being gang-stalked. Lying women were making terrible claims about him. In one text, he says, "It has never been remotely this bad before. Two lying bitches can put me in prison for life. My wife begins to grasp the magnitude of the potential loss." What Sam hasn't known for sure, well, until now, is just how many of the victims were in touch with each other and the filmmakers, and the huge dossier of evidence they had exchanged with one another. What he also didn't know was that a newer victim, we'll call her Mary, had been contacted too. He proactively warned her of the smear campaign, not realising she already knew. Mary is very intelligent, and while she was still caught in the fog of brainwashing, she tried to get more information out of Sam. She decided to play along, so you'll get a sense in her messages that she's been sympathetic to Sam, while also questioning his tactics. Mary is the woman who arrived in Zurich hours after Sam pushed Jane to Richard. So the timing of this is important. She was falling into his trap just before everything else in his life was unravelling. These messages weren't until later, early 2023. You'll have to bear with me in this episode, as I will read out some exchanges verbatim. Sam says, "I'm beginning to think that Richard is making a documentary about me. I have quite a few reasons to think that." Mary says, "Documentary? What for?" He replies, "The women whose lives and mental health I destroyed as I raped them." Brackets, lies. "That I was never a professor. Lie. That I do not have a PhD. Lie. That I extort money from women. Lie." The woman says, "That's not a documentary. Sounds more like a court case." Sam says, "He's meeting with all these women personally for days, as if he were shooting footage." Now, this is me interrupting here. This is not true. Richard did not meet the women. "These women may be wary to go to court, but not to appear in a documentary." Mary says, "But would that be admissible in court? UK courts are not a joke, as far as I know." Sam says, "Not in itself, but it can induce authorities to investigate." He then sends her a link to the TV documentary Tinder Swindler, suggesting this is an example of what could happen to him. He says, "The irony is that we had a counselling session and I am the one who gave him the idea of making documentaries." She responds, "But until the documentary is out and authorities start to move or not, it doesn't seem such a serious problem as before." He replies, "These women are lying. They know they are lying." And he repeats the point, "These women may have been wary to go to court, but not to appear in a documentary." He asks her to clarify what she meant about the "not as serious as before" comment. And she says, "If they are lying and all the court has is a documentary and not testimony, ... He says, "A documentary is insufficient basis for conviction. It's hearsay." She says, "That's what she meant. And it can't be sufficient for an investigation." He says, "I will sue everyone involved immediately. I hope he is making a documentary." In a later text, he says, "If they go to court and I succeed to prove that they are lying, they may end up in prison, brackets, perjury." Mary says, "You might end up with more women at your door. Don't tell your wife." He says, "So I think that they would be reluctant to lie in court. They might end up paying a high price. It's one thing to lie in a documentary and another to lie in court." I found out later that Mary took this as a warning. Later, she mentions one of the documentaries online being vocal about him having a public meltdown. He says, "It's a cult. My videos are aimed to trigger Richard to decompensate and act out. I'm pushing his buttons. The main attack will have nothing to do with videos or viewers. It will take months. I am pushing him to disintegrate via paranoia and more. Slow process, but guaranteed outcomes, as you will see." it is good people are speculating. It helps me to pressure Richard. My target is his mental health. Reverse therapy, and then a laughing emoji.
My breakup with Richard Grannan has taken a life of its own. I have been receiving a tsunami of emails, letters, messages from women. Women who are writing to me with allegations of egregious abuse by Richard Grannan and how duplicitous he is and how sleazy he is. Please, take it with him. Go to the authorities or the police if you have to. Talk to your pastor. Consult your therapist. Open a Facebook group for victims of Richard Grannan.
This is Sam's smear campaign against Richard. He did not receive a tsunami of complaints. This video has been deleted by Sam, but I knew about its existence. And after some digging, I found someone else had posted parts of it. What he's doing here is called DARVO, Deny, Attack, Reverse Victim Offender. He's accusing Richard of his own crimes. The irony of what he says next is galling, accusing Richard of badmouthing him, while he badmouths Richard. And to be clear, even Sam admits in writing that Richard has not done anything he's accusing him of.
I am not your address. I want nothing further to do with Richard Grannan in any way. I want him and every echo of him out of my life. He had contaminated it. Richard Grannan was bad-mouthing me to all the women in my life for hours at a time and throughout our relationship. I will not stoop to his level. I'm not going to respond to you. I'm not going to help you in any way, shape, or form. I am not Richard Grannan's custodian. Please adopt some other course of action.
The original video was much longer, but you get the idea. This is what prompted the flying monkeys to attack Richard. As I mentioned in the previous episode, the text exchange between Richard and Sam is pages and pages long. Just scrolling through them at a too fast a pace to read takes nearly 6 minutes. And the messages are mainly from Sam. Richard doesn't respond until nearer the end. But there are some very damning claims in there, which Sam does not deny. He just tries to shut Richard up. For example, Sam says that the father of one of his patients is a crime boss, and it would be a bad idea for both of us to put her in the stand, meaning witness box in a court. He also brings up the incident with Jane and tries to threaten Richard. But Richard points out that the whole story will come out, including that Sam deliberately tried to make Jane, a 21-year-old, kill herself. He says, "I think you might want to consider how consensual sex weighs against trafficking, coercion, abuse, and trying to drive someone to suicide. One lands you in prison, the other does not." Sam replies, "Give me a minute to review the retraction." Then he writes, "Richard, you want to have a serious attempt to reach a truce? I am not easily intimidated, you might recall. Plus, I am a professional gambler. I was bluffing before you were born." Richard then lists some of the accusations, including spiking Jane, in an attempt to get her to have sex with another man at the dinner. This accusation is corroborated by Jane in writing. It goes round and round in circles with Sam begging him to put it in writing that he won't sue, and in return he'll do a retraction. But Richard's intention is clear: public exposure of his crimes. He says, "Think carefully, Sam. I've told you what I have. Then you should consider what other victims of yours have. Let's go to court and put it all out there. By the time I'm done, you'll never get access to another female again in this lifetime. Your YouTube, your reputation, your horrific sex practices, and the extortion will all be exposed." Sam again tries to plead and bargain, and Richard says, "Too late, predator. I know what you've done and to who."
This was the full mask drop, cards are on the table moment. It was very, very disturbing for me personally. And it was traumatic because I knew what he was, or I thought I knew what he was when I started working with him, but I didn't realize how bad he was. It took about 18 months to recover from. So even though I sound fairly calm and confident in those texts, I was struggling personally with it. Got to remember that at this point, Sam knows that I know, and that there's a group of women who are now talking to each other that Mark Vicente knows, and that everybody of any significance in his life, as far as his reputation goes, knows exactly who and what he is. So he's really desperate at this point. What you can hear in the text exchange is Sam flip-flopping between two trauma responses and two types of manipulation. The two trauma responses are fight and fawn, and the two forms of manipulation are bullying and then pleading. So he's moving from a persecutory angle to a victimhood angle. There's no moral compass here guiding him. He just has the objective of wanting me to do what he wants me to do. He has no shame about how he gets that job done. He really has no normal shame, as most of us would understand it at all. So that's him in desperation.
Were you surprised that there was no denial in there?
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's telling that there is no denial of the accusation. He doesn't say you've got it wrong. He doesn't say these women are heartbroken ex-girlfriends with an axe to grind. You've got nothing like that whatsoever. There is no pushback on the actual accusations themselves. Not one piece of pushback, which is odd. He doesn't accuse me of exaggerating. He doesn't accuse me of lying. He knows what he's done, and it's almost as though by inference he accepts it. And so doesn't even bother to try and push back against it. Also, he's talking to somebody who he knows has the information in front of them. So maybe there's no point in trying to lie.
If that was shown in a courtroom, what do you think might happen?
If the final text exchange I had with him was shown in a courtroom, I think it would depend on the kind of court and what they were looking for. So if it was one where you were trying to convince a jury, I don't think a jury would look kindly on that text exchange. I think that it's pretty damning for him. I think most normal adults who aren't coming from an agenda and have two functioning brain cells can see exactly what's happening in that text exchange. And who is playing what role, and what the intent of the two parties are. So it wouldn't be good for him. It wouldn't be good for him if that was shown in court.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey, before your Q3 call, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Great. Did you include the differentiation angle the CMO asked for?
Already in there. Three angles no competitor's using right now. Just need your approval.
Approved. Thanks. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
At this same time period, Sam texted Mary saying, "Grannan made the mistake of his life. I am a really scary dude. The bizarre thing is he knows it. Suicide by Vaknin." Bearing in mind what you've just heard, I want you to listen to what Sam says to me when I confront him with the accusations.
What I have seen is hundreds and hundreds of documents which have been shown to me, including photographic evidence of wrong that you have done to victims, to therapy patients, and you in your professional role taking advantage of them, impacting them psychologically, and abusing them, sexual coercion, infecting them knowingly with HPV,
I'm utterly,
sleep deprivation,
utterly unaware of this, nor have I been approached.
Contracts of behaviour.
Did you hear it? I'm utterly unaware of this, nor have I been approached. That's completely untrue. My interview with Sam was nearly 2 years after the incident with Jane, which was the catalyst for the smear campaign against Richard, and then the dominoes fell. Jane is a victim you've heard a lot about, and in my opinion, from confidential information that I know, she suffered the worst case of abuse. His MO was different. She was in a highly traumatised state on their first encounter, and he sexually assaulted her within hours of meeting her. She didn't need the long, drawn-out love bombing and the chameleon act. She was already broken, and the youngest victim I'm aware of. I have been in contact with her. I'll keep our interaction private, but I was aware it would be wrong to even ask her to participate in this podcast. But her story is key. In a text to another victim, Sam says of Jane, "I mistreated her horribly from the first hour we met. Never mind why she stayed, I mistreated her. I deserved what she did to me. I am corrosive. Poor Jane. Of course she regarded Richard as a lifeguard. She was drowning in my bile. I am evil and a predator." In another section, he admits to brainwashing Jane for days until she found Richard irresistible. Then he aggressively pushed her on him. In response to a suggestion that Jane was not a puppet and could have left, Sam says leaving is an option if there are no emotions involved and no addiction to a fantasy. Trauma bonding, not as easy as you make it sound. Even you are still communicating with me. He said he's still trying to work out if Jane is working with or for Richard. My life may depend on it. I may not have a life left to fix if she accuses me of rape. He's asked, is she the only one? He says, Richard is selling the angle that it's okay to lie about rape in order to protect other women from my future abuse. He has been in contact with 5 exes, Jane included. In direct messages with Jane, when she tells Sam that she'd felt in danger, he says, what kind of danger? Your relationship with sex is very unhealthy and conflicted. You're very risky. You can accuse me of raping you. I have money and reputation. I'm a public figure. She tells him that she felt pressured. He replied, that is sexual assault. In many countries, this is rape, and it's a lie. You initiated the sex.
You did not cheat. You did not cheat on me. The only two people who misbehaved badly are me and, second place, Richard Grannon. You are not in the picture. You did absolutely nothing wrong. I do not consider that you had cheated on me. I therefore have no need to punish you in any way, shape, or form. I'm definitely not going to abandon you if you come back into my life and you give me a second chance.
This is Sam doing what's known as hoovering. He discarded Jane and was now trying to pull her back in. Note in this next message, he acknowledges he is her therapist, but tries to muddy the waters of responsibility.
I honestly and sincerely, as Sam, as a man, as a therapist, as a psychologist, I mean, in any capacity, I honestly think that we should meet again, even if it's the last meeting. Because we need to sort these emotions out, and we need to understand finally, to come to grips with the question, do we love each other, or did we damage each other and did we hurt each other so much that there is no going back? And I think spending a few days together will give us the answer, and we owe it to ourselves to have this answer.
Message after message from the man who'd abused her for months, threw her out in the snow, and that's before he pushed her on Richard. And remember, Sam has said many times he is incapable of love, but he'll use anything to regain control when hoovering.
You have a man who is deeply in love with you. A bit on the old side, but still deeply in love with you. And you have all your future ahead of you. You're just 21. You're a baby chick. You're a baby seal. That's why I call you baby seal. You're cute. You flap around all the time. You make a big mess. splashing water on everyone who gets near you, but you're still by far the cutest animal in the zoo. And all the kids are clustered around you, watching you in awe and amazement. And everyone loves you beyond words. My baby seal, you have beautiful eyes. And, may I add, very, very tasty feet.
The hoovering worked. Around a week later, she saw him again. And despite his promises otherwise, she was severely punished. Note he used her nickname, Baby Seal. There was another victim he called Minnie Mug, and he would hold up a mug with Minnie Mouse on it. Sometimes he'd just wave a particular item around as a signal that the video is intended for a particular victim. Other times it's extremely obvious who it's for and why.
The more observant of you may have noticed that Minnie is back. Last night, we had a piercing discussion about our relationship, and Minnie said, "I really am sorry that I cannot offer you intimacy, but I can offer you intermugsy instead of intimacy." I said, "Minnie, I have two problems with you. One, you're not transparent. And second thing, your dark side is too emphasized." So I'm going to take one sip and discard you, as all narcissists do. And instead, I'm going to have me a new, transparent and stimulating relationship.
You can't be much clearer than that. His victim refused further intimacy, so he discarded her and replaced her. He calls this dog whistling. And you've guessed it, he's done a video on that too.
Now, dog whistling is a situation where words or phrases have a meaning that is private, a meaning that is limited to two people or a group of people. But the same words and the same phrases would be interpreted and understood completely differently by outsiders. So in dog whistling, there is an in-group, a semantic in-group. This semantic, or in rare cases, semiotic in-group is one or two or three or four or nine people or hundreds of people, but a limited group, an in-group, where words and phrases have a meaning known only to the members of the in-group. And outsiders who observe the in-group would never be able to make full sense of the language used by the members of the in-group. Now, the narcissist abuses this mechanism. The overt narcissist uses dog whistling, as I said, to shame or guilt trip or humiliate his target or his victim or his intimate partner.
You heard Anne, who he calls Bambi, talk about this earlier in the series. Every video has a purpose, and the code names and objects are used to taunt them. Here's a very obvious one about Jane and Richard.
But before we go into the issue of sex addiction and whether there is such a thing, my videos about mate poaching, backstabbing, bed-mouthing, fake friends elicited a tsunami of questions. By far, the most common question is, should I punish them for what they have done? Of course you should. The entire justice system is founded on retribution and just deserts. And in case of betrayal so profound, there is no statute of limitations and no proportionality. You see, I am an Old Testament kind of Jew. Two eyes for an eye and a nose into the bargain. Mind you, it may take weeks or months or years, but justice will be meted out, and whoever the perpetrator may be, he should be looking behind his shoulder day and night.
And another one for Jane after she accused Sam of drugging her and trying to push her to have sex with another man.
In none of the things that I've described is there coercion. The narcissist does not coerce his intimate partner to have sex with others. The narcissist doesn't pimp his intimate partner. The narcissist doesn't run a ring, a sex ring, and this is not human trafficking. The narcissist simply goes with the flow.
I've seen a text he sent to a different victim which says, "I am going to prostitute you in more ways than you can imagine, with me and with others." In this next video, he mentions Disneyland, the word he uses for cold therapy, sadistic sexual acts.
I keep getting these messages from women. "Wow, you're handsome, you're sexy." They're offering themselves to me. And I ask myself, what's wrong with these women? Are they drunk? Are they high on something? Are they legally blind? No, of course they're not. They're lonely. And the thing is, loneliness is the worst conceivable advisor. It pushes you to do things you would not have contemplated or countenanced had you not been lonely. And yet people let loneliness push them. You see, I'm about as attractive as a desiccated lizard and about as irresistible as that, what's the name of that character in Lord of the Rings? Yeah.
Precious.
Yeah, Gollum. Yeah, I'm about as irresistible as Gollum. You just want a Disneyland. A Disneyland. And you would deny everything because of your loneliness. You would even find someone like me physically attractive, mentally attractive, obnoxious and repulsive and creepy as I actually am.
When Sam was panicking about being reported for rape, he posted more than one video suggesting borderline patients can coerce therapists to have sex and fall in love with them.
Most of the malpractice lawsuits against male therapists, well over 80%, are with borderline patients, borderline female patients. Therapists cross boundaries, have sex, fall in love with borderline patients. The dirty secret in psychotherapy is that borderline patients, especially borderline patients, but also histrionics, also narcissists, also psychopaths, also paranoid, also people with bipolar disorder, also people with mood disorders, also people with substance use disorder, all these people are likely to lie about, for example, sexual assault. They're likely to lie about this. The situation is so bad and so common that there is a special policy, insurance policy, for clinicians and practitioners. The insurance policy covers false accusations by patients with BPD and other personality disorders. Literally, these are the words in the policy. The words in the insurance policy is that it covers accusations, especially regarding sexual assault, but not only, accusations lobbed by patients with borderline personality disorder and other personality disorders.
I think the videos that were coming out at the time where he was saying there are borderline personality disordered clients who are going to lure and coerce their therapists into sex, and then they're going to blame the therapist for being a sex predator, I thought demonstrated his weakness. And the thing is, with this personality disorder, it's a child locked in an adult ego state. In transaction analysis, they call this the little professor. That's what it's called in TA. And the little professor is genuinely very, very clever, but not wise. They have no worldly experience. And so as much as at times I'd be incredibly impressed by some of his deception, his trickery, this weird mercurial hermetic thing that he does with people, at other times I'd think, oh, you poor boy. No, that's not going to work. That's not going to stick. nobody is going to believe that your clients tricked and coerced you into sex with them to then accuse you afterwards. No, sir, that's not going to stick. But I think he genuinely doesn't know, because there's something otherworldly about narcissists. They're in this world, but not quite. And then they fall in love with the idea that they understand it very well, but they really don't. I thought it was weak, very, very weak.
I can match up so many videos with the timeline of the messages to the victims. Do you see what I mean about hiding in plain sight? He's not even hiding. And remember what he said to me about normal people fearing being jailed, but narcissists feel quite differently.
If people found out who I am, they would run the other way. If people found out who I am, I would end up in prison. If people found who I am, so it's unpleasant. You know, like, I don't want to be exposed because the outcomes would be horrible. It's a dissonant feeling. In the narcissist, it's a source of narcissistic elation. Look at me. I succeed to deceive everyone. Wow. How superior must I be?
If you believe Sam when he says narcissists feel elated with getting away with it, this next interview clip is particularly chilling, especially knowing he had acted as a medical doctor to women, interfering in their care. And we know, and I've seen texts where he's telling his patients the world would be a better place without them.
A psychiatrist can push his patients to commit suicide. It's extremely easy to do. Can you prove? Can you? I mean, we catch the egregious serial killers, the one who killed prostitutes in rivers, you know, we catch these kind of guys. Or we catch someone who decapitates his victims and puts the heads in a refrigerator, Jeffrey Dahmer. I suspect this is the tip of an iceberg. I think there are many, many more serial killers who are surreptitious and subtle and clever, and they know what they're doing. They operate within their own natural environment, which is so arcane and so inaccessible to others that they will never be found out. For example, a typical police detective would find it very difficult to understand the intricacies of medical treatment, you know, or how a psychiatrist can manipulate his patients to commit suicide. It would be beyond him. I mean, forget about it. And resources dictate such a police detective cannot hire a doctor, a medical doctor, or a psychiatrist on a hunch. You know, so he wouldn't have the backup. He wouldn't have the. I believe there are many serial killers who go undiscovered.
The video where he's saying that therapists can create suicide in their patients and they'll never get caught and it can never be proven, Sam has admitted on camera that he loves to make covert admissions. He loves it. He loves to admit what he's really doing, but he always portrayed that as a joke. So if he jokingly said to the sound man who's putting the microphone on him, you do this for me because I'm better than you and you're like an insect to me, ha ha ha, lol. And then he'd turn to me and say, I love these covert admissions of what I'm doing. I think it's real. I think that's who he is. I think he's very psychopathic as well. So he's very low impulse control. And there's something gleeful about him, like a little boy who's pulled the wings off an insect. He then goes into narcissistic elation and he's gleeful about the bad things he's done. Has to brag. In that way, he's a very typical and quite dull psychopath, probably fitting a very similar profile to serial killers. How do they get caught? Usually they're bragging. They play with the police, they reveal too much, and then they're in prison. They stick a blatant police officer in the cell next to them who's like, oh, I'm a prisoner just like you. They blurt it all out. I think he can't help himself. He's so smug and so gleeful, he cannot help but admit something.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough, stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet?
From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
When Sam drops his mask with his patience, he's not only gleeful, he's proud of his wickedness. He said to one, "They deserve all the abuse they get and more. I am delighted that women are suffering so much. I hope it gets worse for them. Death to all women. Maybe then we will have some peace." To another he says, "Give me a break. What did you lose? You got well paid with accommodation and sex. And many women would cut their clit to spend an hour with me, let alone gain privileged access to me for months." She replied, "You can't be serious." One of his victims said, "You are supposed to be a world-renowned expert for the treatment of major depression, complex personality disorders and PTSD, but you won't even bother to clean up the mess you made." He said in reply, "The only difference is that you gave away your body gratis, which is really beyond dumb." She said, "You left me in a much worse state than I was to begin with." To another victim, he said, "My presence, my mind, my sex is such a blessing and a gift that women should pay with everything they have just to have me around. They should expect nothing else but the little I am willing to bestow. They should be eternally grateful for the opportunity to have met me at all, let alone shared my life and my bed. I am a god, and like every divinity, I expect human sacrifice. They should welcome my abuse as a token of my affection." Sound familiar? Here's a reminder of what he said to the seminar audience in Prague.
"Well, first of all, I don't regard them as victims. I regard it as a privilege to be with me. I elevate them to my level."
In the winter of 2022-2023, when the fog lifted and the patients recognised that they weren't blessed, they'd been abused, they tried to warn others, including a female psychologist who'd been platforming Sam on her channel.
We have a guest today, and it's Professor Sam Vaknin. Hello, Sam.
Hello. Yes, Sam is shorter than Professor Vaknin, etc.
But instead of being concerned about multiple allegations of rape, fake credentials, extortion, etc., she sent all their messages to Sam, making things much worse for them. She even reported one of them to the police. At the time of this recording, she is still promoting him online. In retaliation to the victims coming forward, Sam threatened to release their therapy notes, but rather twisted and sometimes fictional versions. For example, one patient who had been raped as a 12-year-old. In Sam's notes, he writes it as though she chose to have sex and was promiscuous. To Anne, he wrote, "I will no longer feel bound by the confidentiality of our counselling sessions." To another, his threat was more forceful.
"I am going to contact your father and mother with names and dates."
With regards to Sam infecting the women with HPV, as you already know, 100% of the women who got tested had it. They had tested negative before sexual contact with Sam. Only he could have infected them. And the time period of the victims we know of begins in 2017 and goes through to 2023. We know that he knew he had it and he insisted upon unprotected sex. I'm going to read you some exchanges between Sam and one of the more recent victims who'd actually insisted that he was tested for HPV. He told her he was 1,000% clean and had been tested. After she found out she had HPV, she writes, "This is a fallacy and there's no excuse to knowingly expose anyone to a strain known to be high risk." Sam replies, "Knowingly, there is no test for HPV in men. What is a fallacy? Are you going to deny the statistics? How would I know that I have HPV if there is no HPV test for men? I'm learning that I have HPV from you. I thought I may be clean based on my Russian test. That I have HPV is a shock to me as well, not only you. And if you insist that I infected you on purpose, there's nothing further to say. This is something for a psychiatrist. He later says, you're angry and it's more than understandable and justified. But quit being paranoid and succumbing to Granin's effective brainwashing. I did not lie to you about the HPV test in Russia, and I most definitely did not infect you intentionally. This is me, Isla, speaking now. I have masses of evidence to prove that he is lying. I've read thousands of text exchanges and emails, and it's hard not to be enraged because I have them in front of me. The dates of the messages with one patient telling him he's infected them and that they need treatment. Meanwhile, he's grooming another woman. Here is one of his grooming exchanges in which he claims he's the cleanest man in the world to have sex with. He uses the term sex as a continuation of therapy with this and many other patients. Please note, this patient was suicidal when she first engaged Sam as her therapist. The woman says that being a therapist and sexual partner cannot coexist. He says, you're right, it's a question of boundaries and ethics, but should you feel the need, I can still act as a counsellor with you as my client, just FYI. She's hesitant. He says, you're panicking. It's understandable. I will do my best to hold your hand in this transition to me. I will not rush things or make demands on you. We will flow naturally into each other. She says, I guess I am panicking. I told you the truth. It is very hard and I feel guilty and ashamed. He says, you should have a new life and I'm a good first step because of my training. She tells him that he scares her, reminds her of her past experiences. He says, I'm different for two reasons. One, I'm fully self-aware. Two, I have been committed to doing no harm and to helping people since 1995. I have transformed the lives of millions of people around the globe for the better. These two factors should reduce your anxiety and apprehension about being a woman with me. I don't hurt people. I help people.
By the way, in today's very sick and crazy world, humanistic psychology would be considered unacceptable, unethical, and even criminal to some extent. Because, for example, in humanistic psychology, you're supposed to have bodily contact. You're supposed to hug the patient and this kind of thing. And today it would be considered probably sexual abuse.
Hugging patients may not be sexual assault, but inserting bottles, cutlery and other items inside their genitals is. Never mind the other degrading sexual acts and full intercourse. In this next clip, to an audience of mental health professionals, he makes it clear he believes he's doing no wrong with his cold therapy.
Psychology is divided to two periods. The periods where we could experiment on people, torture them, traumatize them, and generally misbehave, which was the golden age of psychology. And then the period now, when we are constrained by utterly idiotic ethics and so on, we cannot damage people in the name of science. And I find it deplorable.
It's remarkable that no one spoke up and disagreed with him. This was the same seminar where he made jokes about recreating incest if a patient was attractive. It's no wonder that he said this to me.
Unbelievable. How did I pull it off? I mean, this is beyond belief. People must be exceedingly stupid. I'm an imposter. And the fact that I'm successful proves that I'm vastly superior to these people.
I know that answer was under the general context of narcissism, but I think this was yet another covert confession. I believe he has gathered a false sense of confidence, because since the confrontation in November 2024 and until now, I have said nothing, published nothing, and he has no idea what I've been doing for months and months. It's been almost 3 years since Mark last filmed with him. In March 2025, he and Lydia launched their own foundation with several bizarre videos.
Welcome to the Vaknin Rangelovska Foundation. Both Lydia Rangelovska and myself
have dedicated the last 3 decades to the study of the most intricate construct in the whole universe, the human mind.
That's Sam's introduction. They're inviting people to apply for scholarships in psychology, economics, and physics. I have no idea what Lydia's role is, and judging by this ramble, I don't think she does either.
Hi, I'm Lydia. I am welcoming you to visit our foundation. I'm one of the... we established it, me and Sam, just right on time. For me, it's meaningful because I was always keen to learning about everything, what comes to me. It's a joy. It provokes their curiosity, and it's much easier to live in a similar, familiar environment, and it's relaxing when you feel safe, when you feel secure, when you know that you will have support from the environment that you know. But never forget to be curious and explore more, because it's worth it.
I have no clue what she's going on about, and I don't believe it's a language barrier issue. Sam is looking on in the video with a strange, stuck-on smile. At the end of each video, one for each subject, he offers this.
If you think this you're up to it, and if this piques your interest and excites you, head over to the application page, submit your application and research proposal, and we'll get in touch with you and let you know if you've won the economics scholarship for this year. Once you have won the scholarship, I'll be working with you hand in hand for a period of 12 months to realize your goals and your stated research proposal. And hopefully, together, we can come up with new angles and some exciting discoveries and explorations. In any case, whichever the case may be, you're welcome here. And hopefully, we will end up seeing you soon.
I'm not sure what the purpose of this foundation is. To make money, to create an illusion of credibility, or to pull in more victims. But regardless, it seems odd that a man who openly admits to getting bored easily, not enjoying engaging with people, and an inability to study any subject to completion, why he'd be offering to do this. He's also putting on a free seminar in Macedonia in May, which at the time of this recording has not yet happened. In the past, he would travel to other countries. As far as I'm aware, he has not sexually coerced any victims in the country he resides. In fact, he states that in some of his communications to the women. Remember, Lydia was there when I confronted Sam. She is fully aware of the accusations, and yet listen to this, especially the part where she says that she knows all that they have helped are living happy lives.
So we established, me and Sam, we established the Vaknin Rangelovska Foundation. Since we help so many people, I'm living with him for half my life, exactly 27 years. And it's a foundation is open for me just right on time. After reliving wonderful moments, revisiting them, I want to revisit them all the time. We publish books to remain. Sam made many videos that will other people see, and it's very pleasant when some of them are writing thank you. It's not about hearing the thank you, but that you. Many people, many good people, many brave people who are not afraid to live and to, as I would say, to be needed and useful, and they are not afraid to give, to help someone, someone else, any kind of help. We were always here for many people, and they are having, most of them, actually all of them that I know of, that they are living wonderful, happy lives.
I was curious to see what Richard thought of the foundation being launched and the timing, plus new professorships of business management and finance mysteriously appearing on Sam's website. He's added two new professorships in the last few weeks, and he's also launched a foundation. What do you think about these latest developments? And he knows I'm onto him. It feels like madness that he's still... He's just like, go big or go home.
I didn't know he'd added two professorships. He may see that his doom is on the horizon and just thinking, let me get as much out of this as I can before the axe falls. I'm not even sure that he really wants to be seen as innocent. I'm not really sure that he's going to fight for innocence, because he's always been addicted to this idea of himself as malignant, as bad. He's drawn a sort of psychopathic, borderline narcissistic supply from being hated. You know, my mental neurotic response was to try and save him from being the most hated man in the narcissism space online, but I should have left him there. He was perfectly happy there. He was perfectly happy to be loathed. He just wants attention. The one thing he can't stand is to be ignored. So if you want to say that he's the world's worst, that's great. If you want to say he's the world's best professor of narcissism, that's just as great. It's all attention.
How do you think he will react hearing all this? I'm pretty certain he's going to listen to absolutely all of it. For his own, for evidence sort of monitoring, and B, for his own ego.
No, you don't need to be pretty certain. You can be absolutely certain, 100% certain. He's not going to miss out on one scrap of people talking about him. He's going to listen to the whole thing many, many times, over and over again. He's going to listen to it obsessively. How he would launch a defense, probably when it drops, he'll go quiet, because he's really going to have to think about what to do next and how to do it. His YouTube channel and his email will fill up with comments from people who've seen the documentary, who've listened to your series, and he'll be under an intense amount of psychological pressure. He'll start spiraling into emotional flashbacks, which he spirals into quite easily and quite quickly. He's quite fragile in that way. But as far as a counterattack goes, I'm very curious. So I'm certain he's going to listen to everything. I don't know how he's going to respond. I really don't know how he's going to respond. I suppose if the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior, we'll get some long-winded rambling, this fake bravado, his stupid fake smile, you know, all of this bullshit that he comes out with. Maybe he'll do that and he'll say, this is a long-term campaign. These people have been after me for years. They've always wanted me. They're funded by the KGB. I don't know. Maybe some grandiose, long-winded nonsense that implicates me, you, Mark Vicente, the producers, the sound people, the set designers, even the people who attended the seminars. It's all one big conspiracy. They're all jealous of me. They're all jealous of my genius. That would be the classic route for a fragile narcissist with psychopathic tendencies to go. But you have to generate energy to be able to do that. Let's see if he can.
What do you hope will be achieved? There are people out there, and there are some people who actually work in the space of psychology and mental health, who, despite being repeatedly told by multiple women, and they are women who are being contacted, have not only ignored the warnings, but they're continuing to platform him and stand by his side, and one even reported one of the victims to the police. What do you hope will happen with these people who clearly still have the wool pulled over their eyes?
I don't think any of them will touch Sam, even if they have some reservation or some doubt that he's innocent, because you won't be able to touch him. That's the age that we live in. He will be an outed sex predator with an evidence trail that is empirical, that is granular, They won't be able to say that he didn't do it. I mean, look, I said this to you at some point in the interviews. You use Occam's razor. What's the easiest explanation? Either when I was receiving the evidence, I was like, all of these women are conspiring together to convince me, oh, that Sam is evil. Oh, and also Sam's conspiring to convince me that he's evil and that he's a sex predator. So by his admission and their evidence, I'm going to go ahead and assume that he's a sex predator, because that's a way more reasonable conclusion than this is some big conspiracy to pull the wool over my eyes. And I think everybody's going to come to the same conclusion. It's not, these are not vague sort of inferences and implications. It's not Sam was sleazy or, you know, he touched my arm at a seminar once. This is the willful transmission of cancer-causing strains of HPV. No, you've got no chance. You've got no chance. And anybody who supports him will rightfully be denounced.
On the day of finishing this episode, a new video appeared on Sam's YouTube. He said something bizarre to an American lawyer and author who was interviewing him.
Why do you think narcissistic abuse is a complex of behaviours, which is by today well-defined and easily recognized, and so on. Why is it not criminalized in any jurisdiction? There is coercive control in the United Kingdom and this kind of bullshit, but there's no criminalization of narcissistic abuse as a complex set of behaviors.
He then challenged her to change the law.
I've spoken to many lawyers in the last 28 years, and I know that many elements of narcissistic abuse are criminalized. You have kind of moral responsibility, if you wish. I mean, why not start a campaign to criminalize narcissistic abuse? I think you will have enormous amounts of support. I mean.
One of the worst abusers I've witnessed in my 30-year career, who has been getting away with his crimes for the same time period, if not longer, suggesting and encouraging criminalizing collectively everything he does to his victims, beyond the rape, sexual coercion, extortion, fraud, deliberate transmission of an STD, among others. Is he still pretending to be the good guy, deluding himself that he is? Can he not see the irony and ridiculousness of him suggesting this? Or is this just evil? Right now, it makes no difference to my challenge of seeking justice. And Richard agrees, a jail sentence is unlikely.
Do I think he's ultimately going to end up in prison? I would be glad if he did, but it's doubtful. But he will be in a prison of poverty, in Skopje, in Macedonia, in a country he loathes. And he will not be able to go anywhere. He will not be able to draw narcissistic supply from anyone. And he will effectively be trapped in a dungeon. That's where this man is going to end up. And that's as a result of the evidence that you simply put in front of people's eyes and that Mark has put in front of people's eyes and said, you know, just look at the truth. Look at what he himself has admitted to. And that's what's going to sentence him. It's going to be a life sentence, an end of life sentence. When the axe falls, for sure he's trapped in Macedonia until the day he dies.
Last year, when I took on this case, I told Mark Vicente my goal.
I'm going to destroy him. I want him in jail. I don't want him to harm another woman.
Presenting you, the listeners, right now with the truth, the evidence, the bravery of Anne, without whom this would not have been possible, the honesty of Richard Grannan, and Sam unmasking himself through his own words, we have destroyed him. And we have done all we can to stop him harming more victims. There is more to come, but as I conclude the main presentation of this story, I want to take you back to the very beginning and ask you, with all you've heard, learnt, and witnessed, do you blame Little Red Riding Hood or the wolf? The Narcissist Playbook is written, produced, and edited by me, Isla Traquair. A very special thank you to Mark Vicente and Scott Altamori for bringing me onto this case, Richard Grannan, and all the other participants so far, and those still to come, including Ian Walker, director of iPsychopath, Professor Graham Hill, a criminologist, The Consent Awareness Network, plus Evan Rachel Wood, H.G. Tudor, and many more faces and voices from the documentary. But I want to take a moment to pay tribute to Anne, who was a stranger to me and now has a very special place in my heart. I've called her a victim throughout, but I have absolutely no doubt that she is now a survivor, and she's turned the worst thing that's ever happened to her into something good. This podcast would not exist without her and the bravery of the other survivors whose voices you've not heard. I am so proud of Anne for being the voice for all the women. They are not all okay, far from it, but I hope telling the story of their abuser and stopping him will bring them some comfort. And if you've been listening to this and are recognising anything going on in your life or a loved one's, as always, there's information in the show notes. And please hang on and listen to the rest of the series, as you will learn so, so much more from incredible experts and, of course, highly personal stories from survivors and the self-aware. Thank you so much for sticking with me this far. And a bigger thank you if you've liked, shared, subscribed, rated, and reviewed. It makes a big, big, big difference. And if you want to show your support and access exclusive content, including the filmed parts of this story, please head to the Patreon. Information in the show notes. And as always, thank you for listening.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.